This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Screaming punk and heavy metal vocals may sound like they hurt, and often they do. That's the band Anon. Now, sounds like that can really damage your voice. My guest, Melissa Cross, is a vocal coach who works with punk and metal performers, teaching them how to scream and shout and bellow without hurting their vocal cords. She doesn't want them to sound like Pavarotti or sing on Broadway. She just wants to prevent them from hurting themselves and ruining their careers. One of the bands she works with is Lamb of God. Here's how the lead singer sounded after she coached him. It might not sound much different from the previous scream, but it probably feels a lot better. Vocal coach Melissa Cross has an instructional DVD. It's called The Zen of Screaming. Melissa Cross, welcome to Fresh Air. What are some of the typical problems that you think metal singers and punk singers have with their voices?
Well, first of all, they imitate their heroes. So they start young, they listen to their favorite CDs, and they try to replicate that sound in an imitative way. And what that does is it makes them use the wrong muscles to do it. That's the big problem. The other thing is the contrivance of actually making it sound violent or sound like anything. They usually associate that sound with tension. So they are unable to disassociate the tension of the emotion with the actual execution of the sound. So that causes vocal damage. You can't finish a tour.
What's some of the typical damage that, metal and punk singers have?
Well, it starts out with, like, chronic swelling, and that swelling often turns into nodules, polyps, cysts, and that is because of the just overuse. In other words, the vocal cords tap together, and when you bang them together because they're always swollen, in other words, to get a result, the scar tissue develops on the actual vocal fold. That's called a nodule. And sometimes it's a fluid-filled injury, which is a polyp. And the results of those two things are the same. The actual polyp or nodule closes before the vocal cords close together. And you get this air. So it goes like, hi, hi. See, like, there's a delay on the cord closing. So they walk around like that and try to finish a tour. And basically they end up not being able to say anything. It's just like, hi, that kind of thing. So that's all from poor execution. But also, it often happens when kids party a lot, they don't sleep well, they get sick, and they're compromised by some other health problem on the road. And then they do that kind of stressful, scar-invoking technique. And it becomes problematic when there's a lot of money on the line for the tour.
Is there a way to scream without shredding your vocal cords? Maybe you could give us a demonstration of a scream that you think is not damaging and a scream that you think is damaging.
Okay, I'll explain. The scream that does not damage is the scream that identifies the false vocal cords, which are actually located higher in the throat. The true cords, those are the ones that sing, right? The false cords are just distortion, and they're located higher in the throat. It's almost as if the powers that be, whoever, whatever created us, started an operation for vocal cords a little higher up and didn't finish them. So it's actually like higher up, it sounds like shrieking. Sounds like an animal. Right? That's the correct way.
No, that sounds, that sounds to me like it might hurt.
It doesn't hurt a bit. Mm-hmm. If it hurt me, I wouldn't be able to say it doesn't hurt a bit, because I would say it hurt a bit, because I didn't use too much of my true vocal cords. Now, if I get all excited and try to sound really bad, you know, like really like violent, and put the feeling in my throat that actually even I get when someone takes my parking space, then I'll tighten everything up in my body and go, like that. Like, and I'm using too much gag reflex and too much pressure on my larynx. And that's what causes the swelling.
Now, the first way you did it, the way that you screamed that wouldn't hurt your voice, mm-hmm. it did sound kind of like a weird beast. can you actually make that into singing?
When it has a note to it, I call that heat. And one of the advanced applications that I try to teach my clients so that they can really step up the bar on this particular genre of music is to be able to transfer from scream to singing within a note. So if like, you know, like to keep going back and forth. Mm-hmm. So it's not all do, 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 and then, do, do, you know, not back and forth like good cop, bad cop. But I really like the art of actually bringing that stuff in and pulling it out and bringing it in and pulling it out and doing it very artistically. There is a faction of the genre that does not appreciate any kind of pitch at all. And you will find as in any, you know, tribe-oriented music that they have, you know, they have like your death metal tribe, you have your metalcore tribe, you have these factions of kids that have separated themselves by virtue of the sound of their music. There's all these names they have for it. It's very funny.
My guest is vocal coach Melissa Cross. She has an instructional DVD called The Zen of Screaming. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is vocal coach Melissa Cross. She works with punk and metal vocalists, teaching them how to do screaming vocals without ruining their voices. She has an instructional DVD called The Zen of Screaming. Now, you were a trained singer, but then you ended up in a punk band in what, the 80s?
Yes, first time around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Late 70s.
So, how did you go from being a trained singer? What did you expect you'd be doing? Probably not being in a punk band.
Well, you know, it was my spirit that was, you know, going the punk way. I'm a singer-songwriter and, you know, put down my acoustic guitar and my Laura Ashley dress and my Joni Mitchell records and picked up an electric guitar and started shredding. And, you know, it was just around that time that, you know, we had, you know, the Sex Pistols. And I was living in England at the time, actually. So it was like The Jam and 999 and Susie and the Banshees and like all these like, you know, Stranglers. And that was beginning and I wanted to be a part of it. Now, what I had learned in vocal training absolutely had no context in that at all. There was singing, there was notes, but what I had learned to do was like all head resonance, which is the difference between what any kind of contemporary music involves more chest resonance instead of head resonance.
Demonstrate the difference for us.
Chest resonance is when I'm speaking to you. Head resonance is this. Now that's in the speaking context. This is head. Now in singing, if I go for my head resonance, I go, and if in my full chest, it's like, right? It's a whole different sound. It's a higher larynx position. It sounds more like talking. It doesn't sound like, it sounds like, you know, more of that and the rock sense. Uh-huh. The rock sense. I can do it, you know, a little less, you know, extremely. I mean, I can go, you know, there's different, you know, I don't have to go straight to the rock thing, to the opera thing. There are some things in between. I had such a, there is a right way to do this, and my teacher taught me this, and therefore I am supposed to do this and that to make a good sound. And that is what I had to throw out the window to get on stage and scream at CBGBs. And I hurt myself. I got a polyp. I did not have surgery. I healed myself through speech therapy. And it was through the speech therapy that I actually found out the missing link between the two.
And what did you find out?
The link between speaking and singing is the use of head resonance in speaking. If you use head resonance in speaking, then you are actually balancing the placement of the voice so that the throat is open. The overtones are there. Head resonance is overtone. If you take out the head resonance and put it all in your throat, you see, now I'm talking without any head resonance whatsoever. I didn't change the pitch, but you see, it's like really brassy, you know? It's like really, you know? But now I moved it up with head resonance in my speaking, and I was able to understand in a sensation way what it is to utilize head resonance without singing opera. So, and that's what I teach.
So had you been speaking in that more clenched throat kind of way that you just demonstrated before your speech lessons? Is that how you were talking?
Interesting question. I went to acting school in England, and I had this like really tiny little voice like this. And people said, you have to lower that voice. So I went down like this, and I tried to sound like Glenda Jackson. And I was like, you know, very like, hey, good morning, how are you? How are you? You know, Shakespeare, you know. And it was actually the wrong placement for my voice. Again, I was going for a certain texture or a sound, which I thought is what they wanted. So I moved my speaking voice down in my throat, which actually was not good for me. What really hurt me, though, was the screaming at CBGBs without any head resonance. Or, wait a second, let me back up here. There is no head resonance in screaming. It is produced correctly with the feeling that I produce head resonance. In other words, if I do, I'm going to put a pencil in my teeth now, mm-hmm. right? And I'm going to demonstrate the vowel E above the pencil and the vowel E below the pencil. Now, when I say below and above the pencil is going to be in my teeth, and I'm going to imagine, simply imagine, the E going over the pencil like this. E. Now, if I put vibrato with that, E, right? Now, this is below the pencil. E, E, right? It doesn't, it's squashier. It's more trebly. E, 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 right? Mm-hmm. It's all an imaginative thing that I just did. All I did was just put in my imagination that I was throwing my voice in a certain way, and my body behaved. My larynx lowered in my throat. My breath pressure was absolutely in place, and I went beep beep instead of going right. And what that does is it places the voice without you slamming with too much chest register. If I go a a a, you hear my chords like bang bang bang, right? I'm not using the whole chord. I'm not using the whole vocal cord there, by the way. I'm only using a portion of the chord, and I'm using it much too violently.
You give your students certain images to use to help them really inflate their lungs and to take deep breaths from the diaphragm so that they get that full air supply. What are some of the images that you use?
I absolutely tell them never to think about the diaphragm. The diaphragm is actually a large muscle that is located up inside the rib cage, and its sole purpose is to draw air in and release air. You don't really need to think about it because when you were born, you came out and it worked just fine. So really to like overthink that is actually to stop the whole coordination or momentum of the process. Now, in exercises, you might want to like focus on how that works. But in performance, you would never, ever think about your diaphragm. I prefer the Wagnerian school or the German school of singing, which I think is more conducive to rock singing. By the way, the diaphragmatic training is bel canto. That is a very common classical, it's the way I learned how to sing classical music. It's the most common vocal training. The other German school involves the lower rib cage, and it is by virtue of expanding the lower ribs out to the side while taking a breath and not engaging the muscles in the upper chest, that you get a full breath. And it doesn't feel like a full breath because it doesn't, what people normally associate with a full breath is the lift of the upper chest. You take that big, right, and your breasts come up into your chin, right, and you think that's a big breath. Actually, that's too much air because you don't need that much air. Too much air makes you hold your breath, just the right amount, which is determined by the expansion of the rib cage coordinated with the intake of air, just the right amount is manageable for this consistency. And that image for women, I call it strapless bra. And the breath is called a by the way. Now, these two go together. A by the way is if, say you forgot to say something, you go, oh, by the way, hear that little breath? By the way, it's just a little tiny sip of air. And I, at the same time that I take that relaxed little sip, I boost my rib cage as though I need to keep a strapless bra from coming down under my skirt, under my dress. So a by the way in strapless bra is all the thinking my students are ever allowed to have about breathing.
So ever since you've been teaching, do you listen to music differently when you hear a singer? Are you hearing what's going right and what's going wrong in their singing from a more technical point of view?
Absolutely. But that's, you know, happens to everybody. I mean, when I studied acting for so many years, and when I go to a show, I can't help but, you know, pull it apart. You know, it's just, I enjoy it. And there are some singers that actually, you know, have allowed me to transcend everything. And I can go there. I can be transported. If it's really good, I won't be technical minded because I'll be in so much awe of the feelings that I'm getting from the performance.
Who are some of your favorite singers now?
You know, I like different singers for different reasons. And it's usually the acting thing that really is what affects me. It's their phrasing. You know, I like Pavarotti. I like classical singers. I like Renee Fleming. I like, for opera, I like Kathleen Battle. I like all those singers, but within that genre, I like Tom Jones. His voice is amazing. I don't like his material at all, but I think he has the most amazing voice of all. I mean, one of the most amazing voices of all time. The guy has the most, I mean, the overtone in that guy's voice is unreal. Unreal. He sings a C above middle C, and it sounds like middle C because of the strength and the overtone in it. I want to meet Tom Jones. Chris Cornell is my favorite singer. That's who my favorite singer is.
Who is it?
Chris. He's a singer from a band formerly known as Soundgarden.
Oh,
now he's
yeah.
in a band with Audioslave. Chris Cornell has been one of my favorite singers for a long time. But he shredded himself to bits. He should have come to me.
Okay.
He's doing fine now, but way back when he shredded himself up.
Well, Melissa Cross, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Melissa Cross has an instructional DVD called The Zen of Screaming. You can find a link to her website on our website, freshair.npr.org.